or the tower, or the entire cathedral. I was going to strangle her. I told her to stay. I presented the reasons, the perfectly rational, easily understandable reasons, and still she disobeyed. Still she left. And now who knew what foolish antics she was up to? Foolish antics that would reflect back on me, a husband who couldn't control his own wife. Furious, I sat at my desk and waited, mentally recited every verse I could on patience. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret over those who prosper in their way, over those who carry out evil devices. Of course she'd left. Why wouldn't she? She was a criminal. An oath meant nothing to her. My reputation meant nothing to her. I sat forward in my chair, pressed my palms against my eyes to relieve the building pressure in my head. Refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil, for the wicked shall be cut off, but those who wait for the Lord shall inherit the land. But her face, her bruises, I have many enemies. Surely being my wife couldn't be worse than that. She would be cared for here, protected, treated better than she deserved, and yet a small grim voice in the back of my mind whispered that perhaps it was good she had gone. Perhaps this solved a problem. Perhaps no. I had made a vow to this woman, to God. I would not forsake it. If she wasn't back in another hour, I'd go out and find her, ransack the city if I must. If I didn't have my honor, I didn't have anything. She would not take that from me. I wouldn't allow it. Well, this is a fun surprise. I jerked my head up at the familiar voice. Unexpected relief swept through me, because there, leaning against the door jamb and grinning, stood my wife. Her arms were crossed against her chest, and beneath her cloak she wore... What are you wearing? I shot up from my chair, stared determinedly at her face, and not elsewhere. She looked down at her thighs, her very visible, very shapely thighs, and parted her cloak farther with the brush of her hand, casually, as if she didn't know what she was doing. I believe they're called pants. Surely you've heard of them. Shaking my head, I forced myself to focus, to look anywhere but her legs. Wait, what surprise? She strode farther into the room, trailing a finger down my arm as she passed. You're my husband now, dear. What sort of wife would I be if I couldn't speak your language?
My language?
Silence. You're well versed in it. After tossing aside her cloak, she threw herself down on the bed and stuck a leg up in the air to examine it. I glared at the floor. I'm a fast learner. I've only known you a few days, but I can already interpret the very angry, slightly doubtful, and frankly worried silence you've been fretting in all morning. I'm touched. Refrain from anger. I unclenched my jaw and glared at the desk.
Where were you?
I went out to get a bun.
Forsake wrath.
I gripped the back of the chair too hard. The wood bit into my fingertips and my knuckles turned white.
A bun.
Yes, a bun. She shucked off her boots. They hit the floor with two dull thuds. I overslept the matinee, probably because someone woke me up at the ass crack, watch your mouth, of dawn. She stretched leisurely and fell back against the pillows. Sharp pains shot up my fingers from my grip on the chair. I took a deep breath and let go. A page boy brought me a rather unfortunate dress this morning, one of the maids, with a neckline up to my ears, to wear until someone could make it to market. No one had exactly made it a priority, so I charmed the kid into giving me the coin the archbishop left for my wardrobe and took the liberty of purchasing it myself. The rest would be delivered this evening. Dresses. To purchase dresses, not this unholy creation. This pair of trousers looked nothing like the grubby pair she'd worn before. She'd obviously had these tailored with the archbishop's coin. They fit her like a second skin. I cleared my throat, maintained my visual of the desk.
And the guards, they let you
leave? Of course. We were under the impression this wasn't a prison sentence. Refrain from anger. I turned slowly.
I told you to stay in the tower.
I risked a glance at her then.
Mistake.
She'd propped her knees up, kicking one over the other, flaunting every curve on her lower body. I swallowed hard and forced my gaze back to the floor. She knew what she was doing, too. Devil.
And you expected me to listen?
She laughed. No, chuckled.
Honestly, Chaz.
It was a little too easy to leave. The guards at the door almost begged me to go. You should have seen their faces when I actually came back.
Why did you?
The words came out before I could stop them. I cringed internally. It wasn't as if I cared, and it didn't matter anyway. All that mattered was that she disobeyed me. As for my brothers, I would need to have a word with them. Clearly, no one abhorred the heathen's presence more than I, but the archbishop had given orders. She stayed. For richer or poorer, in sickness and in health.
I told you, Chas.
Her voice grew unusually quiet, and I risked another glance. She'd rolled to her side, and now looked me square in the eye, chin propped in her hand, arm draped across her waist.
I have many enemies.
Her gaze didn't waver. Her face remained impassive. For the first time since I'd met her, emotion didn't radiate from her very being. She was blank. Carefully, skillfully blank. She arched a brow at my appraisal, a silent question, but there was no need to ask, to have her confirm what I already suspected. Stupid as it was to take a thief at her word, there wasn't a better explanation for why she'd returned. I didn't want to admit it, but she was clever, masterful at the art of escape, probably impossible to find once hidden. Which meant she was here because she wanted to be, because she needed to be. Whoever her enemies were, they must have been dangerous. I broke our eye contact to stare at the bedpost. Focus.
You disobeyed me, I repeated. I told you to stay in the tower, and you didn't. You broke trust.
She rolled her eyes, mask cracking. I tried to resurrect my previous anger, but it didn't burn quite as hot now.
The guards will be more vigilant, especially after the archbishop hears of your indiscretions. He won't be pleased.
Unexpected bonus.
And you'll remain confined to the lower floors, I finished through clenched teeth. The dormitories and commissary.
She sat up, curiosity flaring in her blue-green eyes.
What's on the top floors again?
None of your business.
I strode to the door without looking back at her, sighing in relief when a maid strode past.
Brigitte, can my wife, borrow a gown? I'll return it first thing tomorrow morning.
When she nodded, blushing, and hurried away, I turned back to Louise.
You'll need to change. We're going to the council room, and you can't wear those in front of my brothers.
She didn't move.
Your brothers? What could they possibly want with me?
It must have been physically impossible for this woman to submit to her husband.
They want to ask you some questions about your witch friend.
Her answer came immediately. I'm not interested.
It wasn't a request. As soon as you're dressed appropriately, we leave.
No.
I glared at her for a full second longer, waiting for her to concede, waiting for her to demonstrate the proper meekness befitting a woman, before realizing who this was. Lou. A thief with a man's name.
I turned on my heel.
Fine. Let's go.
I didn't wait for her to follow. Honestly, I didn't know what I'd do if she didn't. The memory of the archbishop striking her reared in my mind, and the heat coursing through me burned hotter. That would never happen again. Even if she cursed, even if she refused to listen to a single word I ever said, I would never raise my fist to her. Ever. Which left me fervently hoping she followed. After a few seconds, soft footsteps echoed behind me in the corridor.
Thank God.
I shortened my strides so she could catch up.
Through here, I murmured,
leading her down the staircase, careful not to touch her.
To the dungeon.
She looked up at me in alarm.
The dungeon?
I almost chuckled.
Almost. The council room is down there.
I ushered her through another corridor, down a smaller, steeper flight of stairs. Terse voices drifted toward us as we descended. I pushed open the crude wooden door at the base of the stairs and motioned for her to step inside.
A dozen of my brethren stood arguing around an enormous circular table in the middle of the room. Bits of parchment littered it, newspaper clippings, charcoal sketches. Underneath it all stretched an enormous map of Belterra. Every mountain range, every bog, forest, and lake had been inked with care and precision, every city and landmark.
"Well, well, if it isn't a little thief."
Jean-Luc's eyes swept over her with keen interest. He sauntered around the table to examine her closer.
"Come to grace us with a presence at last."
The others soon followed, ignoring me completely. My lips pressed together in unexpected irritation. I didn't know who bothered me most, my wife for wearing trousers, my brothers for staring, or myself for caring.
"Peace, Jean-Luc."
I stepped closer, towering behind her.
"She's here to help."
"Is she? I thought street rats valued loyalty."
"We do,"
she said flatly. He raised a brow.
"You refuse to help us, then?"
"Behave," I pleaded silently.
"Cooperate."
She didn't, of course. Instead, she drifted toward the table, glancing at the bits of paper. I knew without looking who she saw. One face drawn a dozen times, a dozen ways, mocking us. La Dame des Sorcières, the Lady of the Witches. Even the name rankled. She looked nothing like the hag at the parade, nothing like the raven-haired mother either. Her hair wasn't even black in her natural form, but a peculiar shade of blonde, almost white or silver. Jean-Luc followed her gaze.
"You know of Morgan Le Blanc?"
"Everyone knows of her." She lifted her chin and shot him a black look. "Even street rats."
"If you helped us get her to the stake, all would be forgiven," Jean-Luc said.
"Forgiven?" She arched a brow and leaned forward, planting her bandaged fingers right across Morgan LeBlanc's nose. "For what, exactly?"
"For publicly humiliating Reed."
Jean-Luc mirrored her gesture, his expression hardening. "For forcing him to disgrace his name, his honor as a chasseur." My brethren nodded their agreement, muttering under their breath.
"That's enough."
To my horror, my hand came down on her shoulder. I stared at it. Large and foreign on her slim frame, blinked once, twice, then snatched it back and tried to ignore the peculiar look on Jean-Luc's face as he watched us. I cleared my throat.
"My wife is here to bear witness against the witch at Tremblay's, nothing more."
Jean-Luc raised his brows, politely skeptical, perhaps amused, before he extended a hand to her.
"By all means, then, Madame Diggory, please enlighten us."
"Madame Diggory." I swallowed hard and stepped up to the table beside her. I hadn't yet heard the title aloud. Hearing the words, it felt strange.
"Real."
She scowled and knocked his hand away.
"It's Lou."
And there she was again. I stared at the ceiling, trying and failing to ignore my brother's indignant whispers.
"What do you know of the witches?" Jean-Luc asked.
"Not much." She trailed her finger along the series of X's and circles, marring the map's topography. Most were concentrated in La Forêt des Yeux. One circle for every tip we'd received about witches dwelling in the caves there. One X for every reconnaissance mission that had turned up nothing. A grim smile tugged at Jean-Luc's mouth.
"It would be in your best interest to cooperate, madame. Indeed, it is only by the Archbishop's intervention that you are here, intact, rather than scattered across the kingdom as ash. Aiding and abetting a witch is illegal."
Tense silence descended as she looked from face to face, clearly deciding whether she agreed. I'd just opened my mouth to prod her in the right direction when she sighed.
"What do you want to know?"
I blinked, shocked at her sudden prudence, but Jean-Luc didn't pause to savor the moment. Instead, he pounced.
"Where are they located?"
"As if she would have told me."
"Who is she?"
She smirked.
"A witch." "Her name?"
"Alexandra."
"Her surname?" "I don't know. We operate with secrecy in East End, even amongst friends."
I recoiled at the word, disgust seeping through me.
You truly consider the witch a friend?"
"I do."
"What happened?"
Jean-Luc asked. She glanced around, suddenly mutinous.
"You did." "Explain."
"When you busted us at Tremblay's, we all fled," she snapped at him. "I don't know where she went. I don't know if I'll ever see her again."
Jean-Luc and I shared a look. If she was telling the truth, this was a dead end. For the little time I'd spent with her, however, I knew she didn't tell the truth. Probably wasn't even capable of it, but perhaps there was another way to procure the information we needed. I knew better than to ask about the man of their trio, the one who'd escaped, the one the constabulary searched for even now, but these enemies of hers. If they knew my wife, they might also know the witch, and anyone who knew the witch was worth interrogating.
Your enemies, I said carefully. Are they her enemies too?
Maybe.
Who are they?
She glared down at the map.
They don't know she's a witch, if that's what you're thinking. I'd still have their names.
Fine, she shrugged, immediately bored, and began ticking names off on her fingers. There's André and Gru, Madame Labelle.
Madame Labelle?
I frowned, remembering the woman's familiarity with Tremblay the night of the robbery. She claimed her presence had been coincidental, but I tensed in realization. The seal on the archbishop's tip, the letter he'd thrown in the fire, had been shaped like a rose. And Ansel's stammered description of the informant had been clear. She had bright red hair and was very, very beautiful. Perhaps Madame Labelle's presence hadn't been coincidental after all. Perhaps she had known the witch would be there. And if so, I shared a meaningful look with Jean-Luc, who pursed his lips and nodded as he, too, drew the connection. We'd be speaking with Madame Labelle very soon.
Yes,
the heathen paused to scratch out Morgan LeBlanc's eyes with a fingernail. I was surprised she didn't trace a mustache in the charcoal. She tries to lure us into indentures with the Belrose every few weeks. We keep refusing her. Drives her mad. Jean-Luc broke the shocked silence, sounding genuinely amused.
So, you really are a whore?
Too far. Don't, I growled, voice low. Call my wife a whore.
He held up his hands in apology. Of course, how crass of me. Do continue the interrogation, Captain, unless you think we'll need the thumbscrews. She fixed him with a steely smile. That won't be necessary. I gave her a pointed look.
It won't?
She reached up and patted my cheek. I'll be more than happy to continue. As long as you say please.
If I hadn't known better, the gesture would have felt affectionate. But I did know better. And this wasn't affection. This was patronization. Even here, now, surrounded by my brethren, she dared to goad me, to humiliate me, my wife. No, Lou.
I could no longer deny the name suited her. A man's name, short, strong, ridiculous. I caught her hand and squeezed, a warning mitigated by my burning cheeks.
We'll dispatch men to interrogate these enemies, but first, we need to know everything that happened that night.
I paused despite myself, ignoring my brother's furious mutters.
Please.
A truly frightening grin split her face.
The Forbidden Infirmary. Lou. My tongue was thick and heavy from talking when my darling husband escorted me back to our room. I'd given them an abbreviated version of the tale, how Coco and I had eavesdropped on Tremblay and Madame Labelle, how we'd planned to rob him that night, how we'd stolen from his vault, but Boss, I hadn't bothered concealing his name, as the idiot hadn't bothered concealing mine, had pocketed everything when the chasseurs arrived, how André and Gru had jumped me in that alley, how they'd almost killed me. I'd really emphasized that point. I hadn't mentioned Angelica's ring, or Madame Labelle's interest in it, or Tremblay's trafficking, or anything that might further connect me to the witches. I walked a thin line as it was, and I didn't need to give them another reason to tie me to the stake. I knew Madame Labelle and Tremblay wouldn't risk incriminating themselves by mentioning the ring. I hoped André and Gru were intelligent enough to follow suit. Even if they didn't, even if they stupidly revealed they'd known about Angelica's ring without reporting it, it would be our word against theirs. The honor of Monsieur Tremblay, the king's vicomte, was surely worth more than the honor of a couple of criminals. It also didn't hurt that my husband was in love with his daughter. Either way, judging by the furious gleam in said husband's eyes, Andre and Gru were in for a thrashing.
"You're my wife now, whether we like it or not. No man will ever touch you that way again."
I almost cackled. All in all, it hadn't been a bad afternoon. My husband was still the most pompous ass in an entire tower of pompous asses, but somehow that had been easy to overlook in the dungeon. He'd actually defended me, or at least come as close as he was capable without his virtue imploding. When we reached our room, I headed straight for the tub, craving time alone to think, to plan. "I'm taking a bath." If my suspicions were correct, and they usually were, the tree man from yesterday had disappeared to the forbidden upper floors, perhaps to an infirmary, a laboratory, a furnace. No. The Chasseurs would never murder innocent people, though burning innocent women and children at the stake seemed like it should qualify. But I'd heard the Chasseurs' tired argument. There was a difference between murdering and killing. Murder was unjustified. What they did to the witches, well, we deserved it. I turned on the tap and perched on the edge of the tub. Bigotry aside, I'd never considered where the witches' victims actually went, why there weren't bodies littering the streets after every attack. All those attacks, all those victims. If such a place existed, it was surely doused in magic. Just the sort of cover I needed.
"Wait."
His heavy footsteps halted just behind me.
"We have things to discuss."
Things. The word had never sounded so tedious. I didn't turn around.
"Such as?" "Your new arrangements."
Arrangements? Now I did turn, stomach sinking. "You mean my new warden?" He inclined his head.
"If you'd like. You disobeyed me this morning. I told you not to leave the tower."
Shit. Being watched, that didn't work for me. Didn't work for me at all. I had plans for this evening. Namely, a little jaunt to the forbidden upper floors, and I'd be damned if another pompous ass would stand in my way. If I was right, if the tower held magic, it was a visit I needed to make alone. I took my time mulling over an answer, meticulously unlacing my boots and placing them beside the washroom door, tying my hair on top of my head, unwrapping the dressing on my arm. He waited patiently for me to finish. Damn him. Exhausting all my options, I finally turned around. Perhaps I could deter him. Surely he didn't want his new bride to spend ungodly amounts of time with another man. I labored under no delusions he liked me, but men of the church tended to be possessive of their things. "Go ahead, then." I smiled pleasantly. "Bring him in. For your sake, he'd better be handsome." His eyes hardened, and he walked around me to turn off the tap.
"Why would he need to be handsome?"
I strolled to the bed and fell back, rolling to my stomach and propping a pillow beneath my chin. I batted my lashes at him. "Well, we are going to be spending quite a bit of time together, unchaperoned." He clenched his jaw so tight it looked likely to snap in two.
"He is your chaperone."
"Oh, right, right." I waved a hand. "Do continue."
"His name is Ansel. He's 16.
"Ooh." I waggled my brows, grinning. "A bit young, isn't he?"
"He's perfectly capable.
I like them young, though." I ignored his flushing face and tapped my lip thoughtfully. "Easier to train that way."
"And he shows great promise as a potential.
Perhaps I'll give him his first kiss," I mused. "No, I'll do him one better. I'll give him his first fuck." My articulate husband choked on the rest of his words, eyes boggling.
What did you just say?
hearing impairment. It was getting alarming. Oh, don't be so priggish, Shus. I leapt up and crossed the room, flinging the desk drawer open and snatching the leather notebook I'd found. A journal, stuffed full of love letters from none other than Mademoiselle Celie Tremblay. I snorted at the irony. No wonder he loathed me. February 12th. God took special care in forming Celie. His eyes grew impossibly wider, and he lunged for the journal. I dodged, cackling, and ran into the washroom, locking the door behind me. His fists pounded against the wood.
Give me that!
I grinned and continued reading. I longed to look upon her face again. Surely there is nothing more beautiful in all the world than her smile, except, of course, her eyes, or her laugh, or her lips. My, my, Shus, surely thinking of a woman's mouth is impious. What would our dear archbishop say?
Open this door!
The wood strained as he pounded against it.
Right now!
But I fear I'm being selfish. Celie has made it clear that my purpose is with my brotherhood.
Open this door!
Though I admire her selflessness, I cannot bring myself to agree with her. Any solution that separates us is not a solution at all.
I'm warning you!
You're warning me? What are you going to do, break down the door? I laughed harder. Actually do it! I dare you! Turning my attention back to his journal, I continued to read. I must confess, she still haunts my thoughts. Days and nights blur together as one, and I struggle to focus on anything but her memory. My training suffers. I cannot eat. I cannot sleep. There is only her. Good God, Shus, this is getting depressing. Romantic, of course, but still a little melodramatic for my taste. Something heavy crashed into the door, and the wood splintered. My livid husband's arm smashed through again and again until a sizable hole revealed his brilliant crimson face. I laughed, chucking the journal through the splinters before he could reach my neck. It bounced off his nose and skidded across the floor. If he hadn't been so obnoxiously virtuous, I think he would have sworn. After reaching an arm through to unlock the door, he scrambled inside to collect the journal. Take it! I nearly cracked a rib from trying not to laugh. I've already read enough. Quite touching stuff, really. If possible, her letters were even worse. He snarled and advanced on me.
You read my personal, my private.
How else could I get to know you? I asked sweetly, dancing around the tub as he approached. His nostrils flared, and he looked closer to breathing fire than anyone I'd ever known. And I'd known quite a few dragon-esque characters.
You!
Words seemed to be failing him. I braced myself, waiting for the inevitable.
You devil!
And there it was. The worst someone like my upstanding husband could invent. The devil. I failed to hide my grin. See? You've gotten to know me all by yourself. I winked at him as we circled the tub. You're much cleverer than you look. I tilted my head, pursing my lips in consideration. Though you were stupid enough to leave your most intimate correspondences lying around for anyone to read, and you keep a journal. Perhaps you aren't so clever after all. He glared at me, chest heaving with each breath. After a few more seconds, his eyes closed. I watched in fascination as his lips subconsciously formed the words, 1, 2, 3. Oh my God. I couldn't help it. Truly, I couldn't. I burst out laughing. His eyes snapped open and he gripped the journal so hard he nearly tore it in half. Spinning on his heel, he stormed back into the bedroom.
Ansel will be here any moment. He'll fix the door.
Wait, what? My laughter ceased abruptly, and I hurried after him, careful of the splintered wood. You still want to leave me with a guard? I'll corrupt him! He grabbed his coat and stuffed his arms inside.
I told you, he snarled. You broke trust. I can't watch you all the time. Ansel will do it for me.
Jerking open the door to the corridor, he shouted, "Ansel!" Within seconds, a young chasseur poked his head in. Wildly curly brown hair fell in his eyes, and his body had the appearance of being stretched somehow, like he'd grown too much in too little time. Beyond his gangly frame, however, he was actually quite handsome, almost androgynous with his smooth olive skin and long, curling eyelashes. Curiously, he wore a coat of pale blue, rather than the deep royal blue typical of chasseurs.
"Yes, Captain? You're on guard duty now."
My infuriating husband's gaze was knife-like as he looked back at me.
"Don't let her out of your sight."
Ansel's eyes turned pleading.
But what about the interrogations? You're needed here."
His words held no room for argument. I almost felt sorry for the boy, or I would have if his presence hadn't foiled my entire evening.
"I'll be back in a few hours. Don't listen to a word she says, and make sure she stays put."
We watched him close the door in sullen silence. Right. This was fine. I was nothing if not adaptable. Sinking back onto the bed, I groaned theatrically and muttered, "This should be fun." At my words, Ansel straightened his shoulders.
"Don't talk to me."
I snorted. "This is going to be quite boring if I'm not allowed to talk."
"Well, you're not, so stop."
"Charming." Silence descended between us. I kicked my feet against the bedframe. He looked anywhere but at me. After a few long moments, I asked, "Is there anything to do here?" His mouth thinned.
"I said stop talking.
Maybe a library?"
"Stop talking!
I'd love to go outside. Bit of fresh air, bit of sunshine." I motioned to his pretty skin.
"You might want to wear a hat, though." "As if I'd take you outside," he sneered. "I'm not stupid, you know."
I sat up earnestly. "And neither am I. Look, I know I would never get past you. You're much too, tall. The great long legs like yours would run me down in an instant." He frowned, but I flashed him a winning smile. "If you don't want to take me outside, why don't you give me a tour of the tower instead?" But he was already shaking his head.
"Reed told me you were tricky."
"Asking for a tour is hardly tricky, Ansel."
"No," he said firmly. "We are not going anywhere, and you will address me as Initiate Diggory."
My grin vanished.
"Are we long-lost cousins, then?"
His brows furrowed.
"No."
"You just said your surname is Diggory. That's also my unfortunate husband's surname. Are the two of you related?"
No.
He looked away quickly to stare at his boots.
"That's the surname all the unwanted children are given."
"Unwanted?" I asked, curious despite myself. He scowled at me.
"Orphans."
For some unfathomable reason, my chest constricted.
"Oh."
I paused in search of the right words, but found none. None except, "Would it help if I told you I don't have the best relationship with my own mother?" His scowl only deepened.
"At least you have a mother."
"I wish I didn't."
"You can't mean that."
"I do." Truer words had never been spoken. Every day of the last 2 years, every moment, every second, I'd wished her away. Wished I'd been born someone else, anyone else. I offered him a small smile. "I'd trade places with you in an instant, Ansel. Just the parentage, not the dreadful outfit. That shade of blue really isn't my color." He straightened his coat defensively.
"I told you to stop talking."
I fell back on the bed in resignation. Now that I'd heard his confession, the next part of my plan, the, guileful part, left a sour taste in my mouth. But it didn't matter. To Ansel's annoyance, I began to hum.
"No humming, either."
I ignored him.
"Big Titty Liddy was not very pretty, but her bosom was big as a barn," I sang.
Her creamery knockers drove men off their rockers, but she was blind to their charms. Stop! His face burned so vivid a scarlet it rivaled my husband's. What are you doing? That's indecent. Of course it is. It's a pub song. You've been in a pub? He asked, flabbergasted. But you're a woman! It took every drop of my willpower not to roll my eyes. Whoever had taught these men about women had been heinously out of touch with reality. It was almost as if they'd never met a woman. A real woman, not a ludicrous pipe dream like Seeley. I had a duty to this poor boy. There are lots of women in pubs, Ansel. We aren't like you think. We can do anything you can do, and probably better. There's a whole world outside this church, you know. I could show you if you wanted. His expression hardened, though pink still bloomed in his cheeks. No, no more talking, no more humming, no more singing. Just stop being you for a little while, eh? I can't make any promises, I said seriously. But if you gave me a tour... Not happening. Fine. Big Willie Billy talked sort of silly, I bellowed. But his knob was as long as his... Stop! Stop! Ansel waved his hands, cheeks flaming anew. I'll take you on a tour. Just please, please stop singing about... that. I rose to my feet, clasping my hands together and beaming. Voila. Unfortunately, Ansel started our tour with the vast halls of Saint-Cécile. More unfortunate, he knew an absurd amount about each architectural feature of the cathedral, as well as the history of each relic and effigy and stained glass window. After listening to his intellectual prowess for the first 15 minutes, I'd been mildly impressed. The boy was clearly intelligent. After listening to him for the next 4 hours, however, I'd longed to shatter the monstrance over his head. It had been a reprieve when he'd concluded the tour for dinner, promising to continue tomorrow. But he'd almost looked hopeful, as if at some point during our tour he'd started enjoying himself, as if he weren't used to having anyone's undivided attention, or perhaps having anyone listen to him at all. That hope in his doe-like eyes had quashed my urge to inflict bodily harm. I couldn't, however, be distracted from my purpose. When Ansel knocked on my door the next morning, my husband left us without a word, disappearing to wherever it was he went during the day. After the rest of my wardrobe had been delivered, we'd suffered a tense, silent evening together before I'd retired to the bathtub. His journal and Seeley's letters had both mysteriously disappeared. Ansel turned to me hesitantly. Do you still want to finish your tour? About that. I squared my shoulders, determined not to waste another day learning about a bone that might once have belonged to St. Constantine. As thrilling as our excursion was yesterday, I want to see the tower.
The tower?
He blinked in confusion.
But there's nothing here you haven't already seen. The dormitories, dungeon, commissary.
Nonsense, I'm sure I haven't seen everything. Ignoring his frown, I pushed him out the door before he could protest. It took another hour, after feigning interest in the tower's stables, training yard, and 23 cleaning closets, before I finally managed to drag Ansel back to the metal spiral staircase. What's up there? I asked, planting my feet when he tried to lead me back to the dormitories.
Nothing,
he said swiftly.
You're a terrible liar.
He tugged on my arm harder.
You're not allowed up there.
Why?
Because you're not.
Ansel. I stuck out my lip, wrapping my arms around his skinny bicep and batting my lashes. I'll behave, I promise. He glowered at me.
I don't believe you.
I dropped his arm and frowned. I had not just wasted the past hour waltzing about the tower with a pubescent boy, however adorable he might be, to trip at the finish line. Fine. Then you leave me no choice. He eyed me warily.
What are you...
He broke off as I turned and dashed up the staircase. Though he was taller, I'd guessed correctly. He wasn't yet used to his gangling height, and his limbs were a mess of awkwardness. He stumbled after me, but it wasn't much of a chase. I'd already raced up several flights before he'd worked out how to use his legs. Skidding slightly at the top, I peered in dismay at the chasseur sitting guard outside the door. No, sleeping outside the door. Propped up in a rickety chair, he snored softly, his chin drooping to his chest and drool dampening his pale blue coat. I darted around him to the door, heart leaping when the handle turned. More doors lined the walls of the corridor beyond at regular intervals, but they weren't what made me lurch to a halt. No, it was the air. It swirled around me, tickling my nose, sweet and familiar, with just a hint of something darker lurking underneath. Something rotten. "You're here, you're here, you're here," it breathed. I grinned. Magic. But my grin quickly faltered. If I'd thought the dormitories were cold, I'd been wrong. This place was worse, much worse. Almost forbidding. The sweetened air unnaturally still. Two sets of clumsy footsteps broke the eerie silence.
"Stop!"
Ansel tumbled to the door after me, lost his footing, and crashed into my back. The guard outside the door, finally awake, and much younger than I'd first assumed, followed suit. We fell in a whirl of curses and tangled bodies.
"Get off, Ansel! I'm trying! Who are you? You aren't supposed to be up here!" "Excuse me!"
We looked up as one toward the tinny voice. It belonged to a frail, teetering old man in white robes and thick spectacles. He held a Bible in one hand and a curious device in the other, small and metal, with a sharp quill at the end of a cylinder. Shoving them both away and climbing to my feet, I searched frantically for something to say, for some reasonable explanation as to why we were wrestling in the middle of whatever this was. But the guard beat me to it.
"I'm sorry, Your Reverence."
The boys shot us each a resentful look. His collar had creased his cheek during his nap, and a bit of drool had dried on his chin.
"I have no idea who this girl is. Ansel let her in here. I did not!"
Ansel colored indignantly, still out of breath.
"You were asleep!" "Oh, dear."
The old man pushed his spectacles up the bridge of his nose to squint at us.
"This won't do. This won't do at all."
Throwing caution to the winds, I opened my mouth to explain, but a smooth, familiar voice interrupted.
"They're here to see me, Father."
I froze, surprise jolting through me. I knew that voice. I knew it better than my own. But it shouldn't have been here, in the heart of Chasseur Tower, when it was supposed to be hundreds of miles away. Dark, devious eyes settled on me. "Hello, Louise." I grinned in response, shaking my head in disbelief. "Coco."
"This is highly unusual, Mademoiselle Perrault," the priest wheezed, frowning. "Private citizens are not allowed in the infirmary without advance notice."
Coco motioned me forward. "But Louise isn't a private citizen, Father Orville. She's Captain Reed Diggory's wife." She turned back to the guard, who stood gaping at her. Ansel wore a similar expression, his eyes comically wide and his jaw hanging open. Dumbfounded. I resisted the urge to stuff his tongue back in his mouth. It wasn't as if they could even see her figure beneath her enormous white robe. Indeed, the starched fabric of her neckline rose just below her chin, and her sleeves draped almost to the tips of her fingers, where white gloves concealed the rest. An inconvenient uniform if I'd ever seen one, but a most convenient disguise. "As you can see," she continued, skewering the guard with a pointed look, "your presence is no longer required.
Might I suggest resuming your post? We wouldn't want the chasseurs to learn about this horrible miscommunication, would we?
The guard didn't need to be told twice. He hastened back out the door, stopping only when he'd crossed the threshold.
Just make sure she signs the register.
Then he closed the door with a rather relieved click.
Captain Reed Diggory, you say?
The priest stepped closer, tipping his head back to examine me through his spectacles. They magnified his eyes to an alarming size.
Oh, I've heard all about Reed Diggory and his new bride. You should be ashamed of yourself, madame, tricking a holy man into matrimony. It's ungodly.
Father? Coco placed a hand on his arm and fixed him with a steely smile. Louise is here to help me today, as penance.
Penance?
Oh, yes, I added, catching on and nodding enthusiastically. Ansel stared between us with a bewildered expression. I stomped on his foot. Father Orville didn't even blink, the blind old bat.
You must allow me to atone for my sins, Father. I feel absolutely wretched about my behavior, and I've prayed long and hard about how best to punish myself.
I slipped the last of the Archbishop's coin from my pocket. Thank goodness Father Orville hadn't noticed my pants. He'd probably have had a fit and died. I stuffed the coin into his palm.
I pray you'll accept this indulgence to alleviate my sentence.
He harumphed, but slid it into his robes.
I suppose caring for the sick is a worthy pursuit.
Fantastic!
Coco beamed and steered me away before he could change his mind. Ansel trailed behind, as if unsure where he was supposed to go.
We'll read them proverbs.
Mind you follow protocol.
Father Orville gestured to the washroom near the exit, where two pieces of parchment had been affixed to the wall. The first was clearly a register of names. I drifted closer to read the tiny script of the second. Infirmary Procedures, Western Entrance. As decreed by His Eminence, the Archbishop of Belterra, all guests of the Cathedral Infirmary must present their name and identification to the initiate on duty. Failure to do so will result in removal from the facilities and lawful action. Feuillemort Asylum Representatives. Please check in at Father Orville's office. Packages are distributed from the eastern entrance. Clergymen and healers, please utilize the register and inspection form located at the eastern entrance. The following procedures must be observed at all times. 1. The infirmary must remain clean and free of debris. 2. Irreverent language and behavior are not tolerated. 3. All guests must remain with a member of staff. Guests found unaccompanied will be escorted from the facilities. Lawful action may be taken. 4. All guests must wear appropriate garments. Upon entry, healers will distribute white robes to don over layperson garments. These robes must be returned to a member of staff before departure from the facilities. These robes aid odor control throughout Cathedrale Saint-Cécile de Césarine and Chasseur Tower. They are required. Failure to don robes will result in permanent removal from the facilities. 5. All guests must wash thoroughly before departure from the facilities. The guest inspection form is located in the washroom near the western entrance. Failure to pass inspection will result in permanent removal from the facilities. Holy hell. This place was a prison.
Of course, Father Orville.
Coco grabbed my hand and steered me away from the sign.
We'll stay out of your hair. You won't even notice we're here. And you...
She glanced over her shoulder at Ansel.
Run along and play. We don't require further assistance.
But Reed... Come now, Ansel.
Father Orville made to clasp Ansel's shoulder and found his elbow instead.
Let the young ladies tend the sick beds. You and I shall join in prayerful communion until they are done.
I have accomplished all I can with the poor souls this morning. I regret, too, our heading for Feymor in the morning, as their souls are unresponsive to my healing hand.
His voice trailed off as he led Ansel down the corridor. Ansel threw a pleading look over his shoulder before disappearing around the bend.
Feymor? I asked curiously.
Shh. Not yet, Coco whispered. She opened a door at random and pushed me through. At the sound of our entrance, the man's head twisted toward us and kept twisting. We watched in horror, frozen as he crept from the bed on inverted limbs, his joints bending and popping from their sockets unnaturally. An animalistic gleam lit his eyes, and he hissed, scuttling toward us like a spider.
What in the- Out, out, out!
Coco shoved me from the room and slammed the door shut. The man's body thudded against it, and he let out a strange wail. She took a deep breath, smoothing her healer's robes.
Okay, let's try that again.
I eyed the door apprehensively.
Must we?
She cracked another door open and peered inside.
This one should be fine.
I peeked over her shoulder and saw a woman reading quietly. When she looked up at us, I jerked back, lifting a fist to my mouth. Her skin moved, like thousands of tiny insects crawled just beneath the surface.
No.
Shaking my head, I backed away quickly.
I can't do bugs.
The woman held up a pleading hand.
Stay, please.
A swarm of locusts burst from her open mouth, choking her, and tears of blood streamed down her cheeks. We slammed the door on her sobs.
I choose the next door.
Chest heaving inexplicably, I considered my options, but the doors were all identical. Who knew what fresh horrors lay beyond? Male voices drifted toward us from a door at the end of the corridor, joined by the gentle clinking of metal. Morbidly curious, I inched toward it, but Coco stilled me with a curt shake of her head.
What is this place, anyway? I asked. Hell.
She guided me up the corridor, casting a furtive look over her shoulder.
You don't want to go down there. It's where the priests... experiment.
Experiment? I stumbled in last night while they were dissecting the brain of a patient. She opened another door, surveying the room carefully before pushing it open wider.
They're trying to understand where magic comes from.
Inside, an elderly gentleman lay chained to an iron bedpost. He stared blankly at the ceiling. Clink. Pause. Clink. Pause. Clink. I looked closer and gasped. His fingers were tipped with black, his nails elongated and sharpened into points. He tapped his forearm with his pointer finger rhythmically. With each tap, a bead of inky blood welled, too dark to be natural.
Poisonous.
Hundreds of other marks already discolored his entire body, even his face. None had healed over. All wept black blood. Metallic rot mingled with the sweet scent of magic in the air. Clink. Pause. Clink. Bile rose in my throat. He looked less a man now and more a creature of nightmares and shadows. Coco closed the door behind us, and his milky eyes found mine. The hair on my neck stood up.
It's just Monsieur Bernard.
Coco crossed the room and scooped up one of the manacles. He must have slipped his chains again.
Holy hell.
I drifted closer as she gently clasped the manacle back around the man's free hand. He continued staring at me with those empty eyes, unblinking.
What happened to him?
The same thing that happened to everyone else up here. She smoothed his limp hair from his face. Witches. I swallowed hard and walked to his bedside, where a Bible sat atop a lonely iron chair.
Glancing at the door, I lowered my voice. Perhaps we could help him. Coco sighed. It's no use. The chasseurs brought him in early this morning. They found him wandering outside La Forêt des Yeux. She touched the blood on his hand and lifted it to her nose, inhaling. His nails are poisoned. He'll be dead soon. That's why the priests have kept him here instead of sending him to the asylum. Heaviness settled in my chest as I eyed the dying man. And what was that torture device Father Orville was carrying? She grinned. You mean the Bible? Very funny. No, I meant the metal thing. It looked sharp. Her grin faded. It is sharp. It's called a syringe. The priests use them for injections.
Injections?
Coco leaned back against the wall and crossed her arms. The white of her robes nearly blended into the pale stone, giving the illusion of a floating head staring at me across Monsieur Bernard's body. I shuddered again. This place gave me the creeps. That's what they're calling them. Her eyes darkened. But I've seen what they can do. The priests have been tampering with poison, hemlock specifically. They've been testing it on the patients to perfect the dosage. I think they're creating a weapon to use against the witches. Dread crept down my spine. But the church thinks only flame can truly kill a witch. Though they might call us demons, they know we're mortal. We bleed like humans, feel pain like humans. But the injections aren't meant to kill us. They cause paralysis. The chasseurs will just have to get close enough to inject us, and we're as good as dead. A moment passed as I tried to grasp this disturbing development. I glanced down at Monsieur Bernard, a bitter taste coating my mouth. Remembered the insects crawling beneath a woman's skin only a few doors down, the bloody tears on her cheeks. Perhaps the priests weren't the only ones to blame. Paralysis, or even the stake, was preferable to some fates. What are you doing here, Mademoiselle Perrault? I finally asked. At least she hadn't used her real name. The Montvoisin family had a certain notoriety. You're supposed to be hiding with your aunt. She actually had the gall to pout. I could ask you the same question. How could you not invite me to your wedding? A bubble of laughter escaped my lips. It sounded eerie in the stillness. Monsieur Bernard's nail tapped against his manacle now. Clink, clink, clink. I ignored him. Trust me, if I would have had any say in the guest list, you would have been there. Maid of honor? Of course. Slightly appeased, Coco sighed and shook her head. Married to a chasseur. When I heard the news, I didn't believe it. A small grin touched her lips. You've got balls the size of boulders. I laughed louder this time. You are so depraved, Coco. And what of your husband's balls? She waggled her eyebrows fiendishly. How do they compare to Boz's? What do you know about Boz's balls? My cheeks hurt from smiling. I knew it was wrong, what with the cursed, dying Monsieur Bernard lying next to me, but the heaviness in my chest gradually eased as Coco and I fell back into our easy banter. It felt good to see a friendly face after wading through a sea of hostile ones for two straight days, and to know she was safe. For now. She sighed dramatically and refolded the blanket atop Monsieur Bernard. He didn't stop clinking. You talk in your sleep. I had to live vicariously. Her smile faded when she looked back at me. She nodded to my bruises. Did your husband do that?
Courtesy of Andre, unfortunately.
I wonder how Andre would fare without his balls. Perhaps I'll pay him a little visit.
Don't bother. I set the chasseurs on him, on both of them.
What? Her eyes widened in delight as I recounted the interrogation. You fiendish little witch, she crowed when I'd finished.
Shh. I stole to the door and pressed my ear against the wood, listening for signs of movement outside. Do you want them to catch us? Speaking of which, I turned back to face her when I was sure no one hovered outside. What are you doing here?
I came to rescue you, of course.
I rolled my eyes. Of course.
One of the healers resigned her post to get married last week. The fathers needed a replacement.
I gave her a hard look. And you know this how?
Easy. She sank onto the end of the bed. Monsieur Bernard kept clinking away, though thankfully turned his disturbing stare to her now instead. I waited for her replacement to show up early yesterday morning and convinced her I would be the better candidate.
What? How?
I asked her nicely, of course. She fixed me with a pointed stare before rolling her eyes. How do you think? I stole her letter of recommendation and bewitched her into forgetting her own name. The real Brie Perrault is currently vacationing in Amaris, and no one will ever know the difference.
Coco, what a stupid risk. I've been trying to find a way to speak with you all day, but the priests are relentless. I've been in training.
She pursed her lips at the word before drawing a wrinkled piece of parchment from her robes. I didn't recognize the spiked handwriting, but I did recognize the dark stain of blood, the sharp scent of blood magic. I sent a letter to my aunt, and she's agreed to protect you. You can come back with me. The coven is camped near the city, but they won't remain there long. They're heading north within the fortnight. We can sneak out of here before anyone knows you're gone.
My stomach sank. Coco, I...
Sighing, I looked around the austere room for an explanation. I couldn't tell her I didn't trust her aunt, or anyone except her for that matter. Not really.
I think this might be the safest place for me right now. A chasseur literally just took an oath to protect me.
I don't like it. She shook her head fervently and rose to her feet. You're playing with fire here, Lou. Sooner or later, you will get burnt.
I grinned half-heartedly. Let's hope for later, then.
She glared at me.
This isn't funny. You're leaving your safety, your life, up to men who'll burn you if they discover what you are.
My grin faded. No, I'm not. When she looked likely to argue, I spoke over her.
I'm not, I swear I'm not. It's why I came up here today, why I'll keep coming up here every day until she comes for me. Because she will come for me, Coco. I won't be able to hide forever.
I paused, taking a deep breath.
And when she does, I'm going to be ready. No more depending on tricks and costumes, or Babette's reconnaissance, or Boz's lineage, or you.
I gave her an apologetic smile and twisted Angelica's ring on my finger.
It's time I start being proactive. If this ring hadn't been in Tremblay's vault, I would have been in serious shit. I've let myself grow weak. The risk of discovery outside this corridor is too great, but here I can practice. And no one will ever know.
She smiled, slow and broad, and looped her arm through mine.
That's more like it. Except you're wrong about one thing. You'll absolutely keep depending on me, because I'm not going anywhere. We'll practice together.
I frowned, torn between begging her to stay and forcing her to go. But it wasn't my decision. And I already knew what she'd tell me if I tried to force her to do anything. I'd learned my favorite swear words from her, after all.
It'll be dangerous. Even with the smell disguising the magic, the chasseurs could still discover us.
In which case, you'll need me here, she pointed out, so I can drain all the blood from their bodies. I stared at her.
Can you do that?
I'm not sure. She winked and bade goodbye to Monsieur Bernard. Perhaps we should find out. The Escape. Lou. Lavender-scented bubbles and warm water were lapping around my ribs when my husband returned later that afternoon. His voice echoed through the walls.
Is she in there?
Yes, but... The tête carrée didn't pause to listen, or to question why Ansel stood in the corridor instead of in the bedroom. I grinned in anticipation. Though he was going to ruin my bath, the look on his face would make up for it. Sure enough, he burst into the bedroom a second later. I watched as his eyes swept the room, searching for me. Ansel had removed the washroom door in an attempt to patch the hole my husband had punched through it earlier, but I hadn't waited for him to finish. The frame now stood gloriously empty, a perfect showcase for my soapy, naked skin, and his humiliation. It didn't take long for him to find me. That same wonderful choking noise burst from his throat, and his eyes widened. I gave a cheery wave.
Hello there.
What are you, Ansel?
He nearly collided with the doorframe in his effort to flee.
I asked you to fix the door.
Ansel's voice rose hysterically.
There wasn't time.
With a growl of impatience, my husband slammed the bedroom door shut. I imagined a bubble as his face and flicked it, then another, and another. You're very rude to him, you know. He didn't speak, probably trying to control the blood rushing to his face. I could still see it, though. It crept up his neck and blended into his coppery hair. Leaning forward, I folded my arms over the edge of the tub. Where have you been? His back stiffened, but he didn't turn.
We didn't catch them.
Andre and Gru? He nodded. So what happens now?
We have chasseurs monitoring East End. With any luck, we'll apprehend them soon, and they'll each spend several years in prison for assault.
After they give you information on my friend.
After they give me information on the witch.
I rolled my eyes, flinging water at the back of his head. It soaked his copper hair and cascaded down the collar of his shirt. He whirled indignantly, fists clenched, then stopped short, slamming his eyes shut.
Can you put something on?
He waved a hand in my direction, the other firmly pressed against his eyes.
I can't talk to you when you're sitting there...
Naked? His teeth clamped together with an audible snap.
Yes.
Sorry, but no. I haven't finished washing my hair yet. I slid back beneath the bubbles with an irritated sigh. Water lapped against my collarbone. But you can look now. All my fun bits are covered. He cracked an eye open. Upon seeing me safely beneath the foam, he relaxed, or relaxed as much as someone like him was capable. He had a permanent stick up his ass, this husband of mine. He moved closer cautiously and leaned against the empty doorframe. I ignored him, dumping more of the lavender soap in my palm. We were both silent as he watched me lather my hair.
Where did you get those scars?
He asked. I didn't pause. Though mine were nothing compared to Coco's and Babette's, I still had quite a few. A hazard of a life on the streets. Which ones?
All of them.
I risked a glance at him then, and my heart plummeted when I realized he was staring at my throat. I directed him to my shoulder instead, pointing at the long, jagged line there. Ran into the wrong end of a knife. I held up my elbow to show him another speckling of scars. Tangled with a barbed wire fence. Tapped beneath my collarbone. Another knife. That one hurt like a bitch, too. He ignored my language, eyes inscrutable as he stared at me.
Who did it?
Andre. I dipped my hair back into the water, smiling when he averted his eyes. Hair clean, I wrapped my arms around my shins and rested my chin on my knees. He got the jump on me when I first arrived in the city. He sighed heavily, as if he were suddenly weary.
I'm sorry we didn't find them.
You will.
Oh?
They aren't the brightest. They'll probably show up here by morning, demanding to know why you're searching for them. He chuckled and rubbed his neck, emphasizing the curve of his bicep. He'd rolled up his shirt sleeve since the interrogation, and I couldn't help but trace the long line of his forearm to his hand, to his calloused fingers, to the fine copper hair dusting his skin. He cleared his throat and dropped his arm hastily.
I should go. We're interrogating Madame Labelle soon. Then the other one, the thief at Tremblay's, Bastien Saint-Pierre.
My heart stopped, and I pitched forward, sloshing bubbles and water in every direction. Not Baz. He nodded, eyes narrowing. But he escaped.
We found him skulking outside a back entrance to Soleil Lune.
Disapproval radiated from him.
It's just as well. The constabulary would have arrested him sooner or later. He killed one of Tremblay's guards.
Holy hell. I sat back, chest tightening as panic clawed up my throat, and fought to control my breathing. What will happen to him? His eyebrows drew together in surprise.
Well, he'll hang.
Shit. Shit, shit, shit. Of course Baz had been arrested. Of course he'd murdered a guard instead of knocking him unconscious. Why had the idiot been at Soleil et Lune in the first place? He'd known they were looking for him. He'd known. Why hadn't he fled?